While the focus of today's gospel is on the Canaanite woman's interaction with Jesus, her dogged, persistent seeking of mercy is on behalf of her daughter. Because of that mother-daughter relationship, and because my daughter is here with me for the time being, Kirsten will be joining me to provide commentary throughout the sermon. Now to begin. Jesus enters the district of Tyre and Sidon. So far, so good. But just then, a Canaanite woman comes out toward Jesus and starts shouting. The Greek word used here, kradzo, means to cry out, shriek, scream, screech. It is the disciples' same cry of fear. It is a ghost when they see Jesus walking on the water toward them. It is the same cry of Peter, Lord, save me, when he begins to sink into the sea. And it is the same cry as the death cry of Jesus from the cross. This is the woman's cry, a cry pulled up from deep within. The woman who shouts, have mercy on me, Lord, son of David, is, according to Matthew, a Canaanite. This is the only single independent usage of this term in what we call the New Testament. Why does Matthew choose to use Canaanite? Perhaps it is because of the long-standing enmity between Jews and Canaanites. Perhaps it is because she does not worship the God of Israel. Or perhaps it is Matthew's way to acknowledge her ancestral relationship with Jesus. But the Gospel of Matthew opens with an account of the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, son of Abraham. In addition to Jesus' mother Mary, only four other women are mentioned in this genealogy list. Two of them, Tamar and Rahab the prostitute, are Canaanites. Note that, though not of the house of Israel, the Canaanite woman dares to cross the ethnic divide, addressing Jesus as son of David. From her personal anguish, she cries, have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon. Jesus' first response to the mother's anguished plea is silence. In fact, Jesus does not answer her at all. Of course, in a way, that silence is a response. Peter Bregman, in an article in the Harvard Business Review, calls silence the worst kind of feedback.
I think that anyone who's ever experienced the silent treatment or who's ever been talked over or dismissed could empathize with this woman. This could also be true of anyone who's ever been in a meeting at which they offered a great idea, only to have their words disregarded, as if they weren't even present. Only then to have someone else offer the exact same idea, which is now met with enthusiasm and acceptance. And to me, this is all related to mansplaining, which is what occurs when a man talks condescendingly to someone, especially a woman, about something he has incomplete knowledge of, with the mistaken assumption that he knows more about it than the person he's talking to does. This gospel passage gets at a gritty issue that we don't want to talk about sometimes, for fear of those in power being uncomfortable. But we cannot stay silent anymore. We must persist, and persist loudly.
Indeed, the Canaanite woman does persist, and apparently she indeed persists loudly. The disciples are annoyed. They can't hear themselves think with all that screeching and shrieking for mercy. As we heard in the children's sermon this morning, children's church this morning, it was suggested that Jesus won't help her because she's screaming. But that was interesting. So they do that, but the disciples do the logical thing at this point. They practically beg Jesus to send her away. The disciples have had practice in trying to send people away before. 2 weeks ago, we had the story of the feeding of the 5,000 men, plus the women and children. There, as evening approaches, the disciples ask Jesus to send the crowds away so they could go buy themselves something to eat. But in that story, Jesus' response to the disciples is, they need not go away, you give them something to eat. At this point in today's story, though, the disciples are not asked to help ease the situation. Instead, Jesus responds, using words this time, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Is this statement a reminder for Jesus to keep the focus on the original mission? Or is it a reminder to the woman that she is an outsider? Or is it a combination of the two?
To me, the disciples clearly see the woman as a problem here. This brings to my mind the example that the wishful thinking and active complaining on the part of the current administration and its COVID-19 response does not, in fact, make the coronavirus problem go away either.
Not only does the Canaanite woman not go away, she approaches closer and, in fact, in a sign of respect, kneels before Jesus and requests simply, "Lord, help me." In the words of Pastor Barbara K. Lundblad, this is where Jesus goes to the dogs. For Jesus says, "It is not fair, it is not morally right to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." Perhaps this woman has heard racist slurs before, but knowing that the health of her daughter is at stake, and knowing deep down that Jesus has the power to help her, she persists. New Testament professor Mitzi J. Smith puts it this way: the Canaanite woman persists. Like Sojourner Truth, Rosa Parks, Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, Oprah Winfrey, Senator Hillary Clinton, First Lady Michelle Obama, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Senator Kamala Harris, the Canaanite woman persisted. So many anonymous women, she continues, like the Canaanite woman, have persisted as lone minority voices among a majority of authoritative and powerful men. She persisted. She didn't go away. She won't be dismissed.
This reminds me of intersectionality, the theoretical framework developed by Kimberly Williams Crenshaw, which has evolved into a way to understand and analyze how different aspects of a person's identity, things like gender, sex, race, class, religion, physical appearance, national origin, how these things combine to create particular and unique forms of discrimination and privilege, acknowledging that subjective personal experience creates differing experience. Creates differing identities. This woman in the gospel is facing several layers of removal from privilege, several layers of being told no, several layers of rejection and insult. And yet she persists, and yet she maintains hope. She recognizes who Jesus is, and she keeps faith.
Your mention of intersectionality reminds me of an article in the August issue of Living Lutheran. Gigi Sahara Grant is a Filipina American and an ELCA pastor. She says that when she was in seminary, a well-meaning Asian male pastor warned her, "You've got a double whammy. You are a woman and a person of color." Back then, she didn't understand what he meant, but she adds, "I do now. Throughout my 17 years of ministry, I've seen sexism, patriarchy, and racism manifested by the church in subtle ways." So yes, Jesus does say to the woman, it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. But picking up on the metaphorical crumbs Jesus has tossed her, she replies, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." To which Jesus exclaims, "Woman, great is your faith." I'd like to note at this point that there have been various efforts to make Jesus' initial three responses less harsh and more palatable. One such interpretation is the claim that they were spoken to test the strength of the woman's faith. But if her daughter's healing were to be dependent upon the amount of her mother's faith, what would that say to parents who have prayed and prayed desperately and diligently for a child's healing, only to have the child continue to struggle with a debilitating mental illness or a life-threatening addiction, or only to have the child die? Was their faith not enough? But the Canaanite woman has not made any direct confession of faith, so something else is going on here. Although I think it's interesting that Jesus' praise of the Canaanite woman's great faith comes so closely after last Sunday's story of Jesus chiding Peter for his little faith.
That was when Peter came walking on the water towards Jesus, got distracted by the strong wind, became frightened, and began to sink, right?
Yes, that's when Jesus said to Peter, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" The mother in today's story has approached Jesus with nothing. "No, if you are this, then that," request like Peter's, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come on the walk on the water." She comes with nothing except her deep concern for her daughter and her trust that Jesus will give her what she is seeking.
And her persistence. She comes with her persistence.
Yes, and perhaps her fearlessness.
And how about her quick-wittedness when she comes back with a response about dogs eating their master's crumbs?
That too. A word about the broken pieces, those crumbs. Not all commentators agree on what the mother is asking here. One interpretation is that the crumbs from the table that Jesus sets will be more than enough to satisfy the Canaanite woman. Another interpretation is that she's only asking Jesus to spare a few crumbs of grace, and that she indeed receives her crumbs when her daughter is healed. Pastor Lundblad, however, disagrees when she says, the Canaanite woman taught Jesus that she and her daughter deserve more than crumbs. Surely there's enough for me and my daughter. That's what Jesus finally hears and comes to believe. Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. While we're on the subject of eating and being fed, we could even say that this outsider mother fed Jesus by breaking open for Jesus new understandings of the extent and diversity of God's community.
Now, if Jesus could be transformed by the encounter with the Canaanite woman, might we also be transformed by our encounter with the other? Could we also learn from someone who looks, believes, or acts differently than we do?
To that end, as part of each interfaith event I host on campus, such as my 23rd annual Braided Streams Women of Faith Speak panel presentation that happened right before spring break this year, we read Leonard Swidler's Dialogue Decalogue. The Decalogue opens with these words. The primary purpose of dialogue is to learn, that is, to change and grow in the perception and understanding of reality, and then to act accordingly. Valerie Kaur is a civil rights activist, lawyer, and filmmaker. She's also a practicing member of the Sikh faith. In her recently published book, aptly named See No Stranger, she speaks about deep listening as an act of surrender. She says, we risk being changed by what we hear. She acknowledges from profound personal experience that listening to someone who is, in her words, absolutely abhorrent, or whose beliefs are disgusting, enraging, even terrifying, is extremely difficult. She says, when listening gets hard, I focus on taking the next breath. Listening does not grant the other side legitimacy, she says. It grants them humanity and preserves our own.
So with this talk of listening and transformation, I'm wondering, who are the Canaanite women in our midst today? Who are the ones treated as dogs? Whose stories do we need to hear?
There are many, perhaps overwhelmingly many, responses to those questions. One that comes to mind right now to me is close to home, right here in the ELCA. During 2019 and 2020, we have been celebrating 50 years of Lutheran women being ordained in the United States, 40 years of women of color being ordained, and 10 years of LGBTQIA+ individuals being able to serve freely. Yet, on average, women of color wait 3 to 5 years to enter their first and sometimes subsequent pastoral calls. 45% report receiving compensation below synod compensation guidelines.
Can we not somehow take some of that Canaanite woman's spirit out into the world today as we seek mercy for the troubles of our own lives and our broken world too? In fact, how can we not persist throughout rejection and insult on our journey towards justice and healing? Silence and derogatory insults have been flung at persistent women and dissidents throughout history. But we must keep the faith. We must keep hope for healing.
Pastor Sahara Grant is one person working to do just that. She says, in my role as president of the ELCA Association of Asians and Pacific Islanders, I've learned that it's not enough to speak for one's own community only. It's crucial to connect and work together with the other ethnic associations so that we can speak in a unified voice, loud enough that the wider church will hear us and respond to our common needs.
So then, let us today, with the Canaanite woman in this gospel reading, raise our voices and raise them loudly and persistently on behalf of those in need of care, concern, and compassion.
Yes, and I'd like to ask, or us to think about, who are the outsiders interrupting us, demanding that we listen to their stories? Who are the children for whom we need to raise our voices, hurling our prayers and petitions to Jesus? What will help us persist over the long haul? How might we be disciples who join together, not to stifle or turn away those who are different from us, but to advocate for the marginalized, the other? How can we, like Jesus, be open to transformation to being changed by those we encounter.
Let us go out into the world this week as we seek our own answers to these open-ended questions. I challenge you to be persistent in your questioning, in your searching, and in your pursuit of justice.
Amen.